but I'll tell you something. So, you know, I can't say that, you know, life's been easy at times. You know, it's been a struggle and it's been, you know, at times frustrating. But I did find myself at that time, in that decade, sort of thinking, oh, God, I'm real, like a real failure here. Killer, killer, podcast.
KellerKellerOfficial.com. You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Yeah. It's going to be a good one. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct. Central London, or central as you need to be, choose to be, want to be. Where would you want to be anywhere else? Big shout to graffitikings.co.uk. Hold tight all the regulars for sharing and caring. You know, it's super important. Comment below. Tell us what time it is, what you're doing, how you're doing, and whereabouts in the world you are. Everyone that's got a Kellervision app, you know what time it is. Free download iPhone app. Our app store for your street culture sports. Inside the house right now, we have a bit of a hero of mine. My fanboy's up to 30. This lady here not only invested early in the punk genre, she got onto New Romantics, Soho, gone on to do a plethora of different things, from fanzines to magazines, reporting, editorials, DJing all across West London and beyond. What are you saying, Princess Julia inside the house? How are you? Give us a
okay there.
How was it? Was that good?
Yeah, it was a very informative introduction, yes. I'd say.
I got you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You've missed a few bits out.
Well, this is what we're here to do.
Yeah, we'll be covering those, won't we?
Big shout Dave Baby, of course, for Dave Baby hooking us up. Your history is very much in line with, I don't know, it's the benchmark. It's the beginnings of, and you were totally in the mix of it from the early doors. Again, you know, highlighting the introduction, it doesn't even do it any justice. You know, reporting on your life as is right now before we get into it. How are you feeling? How are you feeling right now?
Quite perky. Considering the many decades that I've lived through. Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling optimistic, I feel. Excited. Mm. Maybe a slightly tentative with some things. Mm. Watching things unfold as they do.
Mm. Life has a way of doing that, doesn't it?
But on the whole, I have quite an optimistic and positive outlook on proceedings. Mm. That's probably something that has carried me through. Mm. I always try to see other people's points of view and be excited by them and just have an air of curiosity.
Curiosity. I think that is most if I was to define you in the walks that I've seen you pass and all the interviews you've done, all the conversations of, you know, from, like I say, punk to through to the 80s, New Romantics era and beyond, the rave culture, all the genres that you cover. Mm. Curiosity, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Do you love to discover things and find things? You seem to be always at the forefront of that.
I do love hearing about what people are up to. I'm quite nosy.
Big up the nosy crew. They're all watching.
but I'm very excited about people making plans. And, you know, if somebody comes to me with an idea or something that they've maybe been asked to do, I'm the first one in the queue going, go on then, go on, get it, go on, have a go.
Yes, hell yeah.
I mean, what else is there to do?
Yeah,
you
that's
might
true.
As well.
I said this before you came on, and you're, for me, and a handful of other people that are associated with me that value these eras we talk about and yourself as in the genre that you are, you're almost like the okay sign of the benchmark of creative output, whereby, you know, you've transcended so many genres and you've just kind of kept going. It's always been like this long-standing thing that you're a part of the London scene. And it's few and far between, man.
I am very much part of the London scene. But I also sort of see myself as part of a sort of global scene, in actual fact.
That's
and I've saying. Always felt quite sort of international. I'm half Hungarian anyway, so I've got that sort of mood sort of somewhere in me. But I've always felt like I'm part of a wider community of free thinking people. Could I put it like that?
Yeah, you just did. It sounds great.
You know, so with that in mind, I feel like the world is a creative collective, and everywhere I go in the world and in London, I tend to gravitate towards people that are thinking in the same sort of way as I do. And I think it's really exciting and enlightening. And that's one of the reasons that I really do enjoy social media, is that I feel it sort of galvanises an international community, which I find very exciting.
It's very positive, isn't it?
I want to be positive. I don't really want to sit there and go, ooh, it's not like it used to be, because obviously nothing's how it used to be, because that was a different time.
A whole
there were
different
factors
yeah.
involved. So, you know, I always think everything is like a continuum. So yeah. when I think of subcultures, and which is a subject that obviously I'm quite often asked to talk about, I always think of the sort of threads of creativity spanning the decades.
Like it's all linear, it's all there, it's just one big thread of...
So I never really tend to look back, although I will pay my respects and homage to legacies and realise that those moments are important. People and moments are important, but, you know, because obviously ideas don't spring out of thin air. They're coming from somewhere. So I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
How sort of things connect, and how all those things meld together. And there's always something new, a different way of looking at something, a different way of doing something, but with a reference to something that's gone before, obviously. And that makes life exciting.
Yeah, it does indeed. And going back to what you were saying about internet and, you know, the community that is, it becomes this binding force, doesn't it? And if you've got like-minded people all talking the same language, it's kind of impossible to have any negative energy coming out, because you're all in the think tank of where you are.
Hopefully.
That's the theory anyway.
That's the theory.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously you don't want to be in an echo chamber either too much. But, you know, obviously people will disagree or come with different angles of analysing and going forth with their creative endeavours. You know, and that's good as well. It all adds.
Yeah, for sure. On socials, you most definitely do come across as the forward-thinking.
Do I?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. This must in at the same time be reasonably orchestrated, because you must get a lot of people coming up to you saying, can you talk about, you know, old school, you know, Steve Strange moments? And you must get a lot of those kind of people come up to you.
Not really.
Really?
Actually, no, because the world that I'm in is quite current.
Good.
You know, like I'm in a community. And I feel very much part of that community. And some people know my illustrious background, but obviously every now and again I get hauled out to be a talking head on one of those sort of TV type things, which I'm happy to do, because I feel it's very important that that sort of blitz kid moment in the late 70s is... you know, represented by a variance of people
that were there
in the scene, and that are still doing stuff today. So I'm happy to do that.
Talk to me about that. Talk to me about that time briefly, because it'd be interesting, because there are, although like you say, it was a time, it was an era, and it's incubated in this place, but there are similarities, telltales. There's things that if it wasn't for those things, we wouldn't be here talking. I mean, you are the media, you were the first of the media before this podcast stuff. You were definitely there doing it, spreading the word.
Well, you know, a little bit. I mean, I left school in 1976, which I guess was slap bang in the middle of the punk happening moment. Most people I know of my age, our roots are really in glam rock, actually, which was like the early 70s. So that was really a pivotal sort of growing up moment. And then really that sort of like a group of people in the mid 70s, formed a collective. But I was just on the sort of cusp, on the edge of that, really. I was just a little bit too young to be involved in the punk scene, although it was happening, and obviously did know a few key members of that scene. Which, to my mind, dissipated quite quickly because by the end of 77, you know, most of the bands had got signed up. It was already going into another phase. And it was at that moment that, like, I went into the more, you know, the whoever was left outside of punk. But there was also a very vibrant soul scene going on, and disco scene. So the Blitz, really, or the New Romantic scene, was a sort of conglomeration of quite a few different scenes like that. There was a rockabilly scene, there was a soul scene, there was a disco scene, and then there was a punk scene. So that, you know, all in equal measure, those were the sort of like collectives of people that were gravitating towards creating this sort of new romantic scene and became part of that. But there were lots of people, you know, and the gay disco scene's really important, you know, because a lot of the time in the punk scene there were lots of gigs. There were a few gigs. People were doing gigs. And then the gigs would end at like 11 o'clock or something. So there'd be nowhere to go. And so the gay scene was the scene where we could all go and be welcomed. So there were a few clubs that we went to in Earls Court, and there was the Sombrero over in Kensington High Street. And there were these little, you know, enclaves of gay discos going on that we would go to as well as. And but out of that, various groups of people from different scenes got together, and we became known as the sort of New Romantics. And it was very inventive of all the people involved. It was something that wasn't really planned too much. There was a spontaneity to it, And really, from my perspective, it was all about getting dressed up and getting ready to go out and just sort of finding a space for us to have some fun. Mm. And from that, catalyst, I guess it spawned a sort of platform for the 80s to happen. Yeah. And, it was a sort of a mixture of, pure bravado and instinctual passion to sort of explore all these creative outlets. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's why that particular night, which didn't really last that long, it was only probably a couple of years, really, is always cited as a sort of pivotal moment.
Mm. And that place being, was it Gossips?
It started off in a club called Billy's that later became known as Gossips.
There you go, yeah.
And then pretty quickly it was Steve Strange and Rusty moved it to a club that was called The Blitz.
There you go, yeah.
But that was the name of the club. Mm-hmm, but that title became a tagline for to describe that particular night.
Talk to
me
about...
A Tuesday night of being New Romantic.
Dressing up as New Romantic,
well, it wasn't really a label, to be fair. It was, we were called lots of different things, like The Cult With No Name, things like that. So that was the media calling us that, but I think we didn't really care. It's not that we didn't care, but we embraced... Mm. We thought it was quite a good title, I think, actually.
And as long as it wasn't boring, that's the main thing. It was vibrant and lively and alive.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it was quite an austere time, the late 70s of ye olde London town. We were all squatting in Warren Street and the surrounding area. And but also, as the 70s became the 80s, there was an air of excitement and people were, establishing themselves in their various creative disciplines. Mm. And that was exciting.
Youthful wisdom.
Yeah, it was youthful, but also the Blitz itself had quite a sort of like intergenerational... clientele, to be fair. It was quite a mixture of people. It wasn't just one sector as...
Because Bowie would be there and then Mick Jagger.
Well, I guess, they came to visit. Mm. But, there were people like Phil Lynott was there.
Wow.
that you wouldn't really necessarily expect,
At all.
And then there were, like, established people in the music world...
A&Rs, I suppose, sniffing around.
Well, and I don't know if they were really. No. And then there was sort of us as fashion designers, people at art school, filmmakers, all kinds of people.
Oh, God, that's
so cool. Would-be pop stars, i.e. A very young boy, George, but Gary Newman would be there sometimes, but they were all starting out. Obviously, Spandau Ballet was our regular house band.
Damn.
It just sounds very exciting, doesn't it? Like,
yeah. But I guess living in its different.
It was just sort of normal. Like now I go to an event or a club and it's similar kind of fabulous people.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same sort of thing.
I mean, in more recent times, the lovely Bimini from RuPaul's Drag Race paid me a marvellous homage on that show.
Huge.
And, I work at a pub, I DJ there, and I'm quite involved in the LGBTQ+ community.
Absolutely.
And I work at a pub called The Glory. a lot. And
tell that's say where that is. Whereabouts is that?
So. Like the Glory is on the Kingsland Road in the Haggerston Park area. You know, the people that are there working at the pub, that they all do really like beyond things. They're actors, they're screenwriters, they're designers.
So good.
You know, that's our bar staff.
That's just the bar staff.
Yeah.
How long have you been there
for? Well, the pub's been there about 6 years now. So we've, you know, I feel very much sort of part of it, but I feel very much part of, you know, all the clubs in my community that I work at. That could be Dawson Superstore. More recently, I've been DJing at a club called Feel It at the O'Meara, which is kind of fantastic. That's hosted by Jodie Harsh. Where else? Well, there's so many.
Constant. You really are a spokesperson for scenes and people, aren't you?
I still really, really do enjoy a social activity and enjoy clubbing. It's possible that I wouldn't go out quite so much if I wasn't actually DJing at some of these things, but I do go when I can and I've got the energy to things as a personage.
Curiously, because you obviously have the experience you mentioned about, you know, the New Romantics, the Blitz, and how there were so many creative people that were ballooning around at the time. And I'm thinking, with the experience you have, and nowadays, especially with the, you know, the upcoming artists and, you know, potential career shapers of the industry we're in now, being around you, being bar staff, being in the place, you must see a lot of telltale signs. You must be a really good go-to person to see, like, how not to do things and how to do things. You must see a lot of that.
First of all, I don't think there's any how to or how not to rules.
Right.
I would forget about all that.
Yeah,
I would just follow your instincts.
How do you get to this point in your mind? Because there'll be a lot of people out there, right, that will totally be, yeah, but I've got to quickly do this because I'm, you know, that's just the nature of the world now, isn't it? It's not quick enough. It needs to be faster.
Do you think so?
Yeah, man.
See, I don't really, I mean, I think it's fantastic to have ambition and have the sort of get-go to, like, make things happen. I really admire that. But I'm much more casual in my approach.
You damn well are.
I don't really see that there is a great urgency, but I do see that, you know, there is a compulsion in people to get their ideas out and across, and yeah, there can be an urgency to do that, especially with some of the situations that the planet is in.
Mm.
I think it is important, you know, if you've got the impetus to create a platform or get something out there ASAP. I think that's really inspiring. I'm on the coattails of that though, because I don't really feel that I'm snappy enough.
Right,
I need to get
below,
more
please.
Snappy.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that.
I need to get more. I'm a bit like, oh well, if it happens, it happens. You know,
but your social media. No, I don't. I'm not quite there, because I feel you command a presence online leadership level.
Really?
For real? Like you're totally like you're totally that
I
person.
I think I'm probably just like in the mix.
You don't see it.
I feel like I'm in the mix and I'm part of something. You know.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm at the forefront of things. I feel like I'm in the spirit of something, 100%.
But you do command. Like there is a tone to which you.
All right, I am a bit snobby.
Right, now here comes the podcast. Let's go.
Yeah.
No,
I am a bit. Like, I'm quite particular with my taste, but I think everyone's particular with their likes and what they like to be affiliated with, and what, you know, the sort of things one is interested in.
What are you interested in?
I'm interested in people exploring surprising facets of their creative lives. Mm. I'm interested in their stories. I'm interested in my own angles of and situations and outpourings, as well as, you know, I sort of see it as a whole sort of thing.
So there's no time on it.
I see myself as part of something.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm really into, you know, if I do go to something, I'll post about it, I'll talk about it, and it's exciting.
You love the news. Yeah. It's the news.
It's the news, you know, and I'm really into it, you know. I'll carry on.
Yeah, no, it's just you said the news and I was thinking, wow, it really is. You do create, and this is, again, just going back to your editorial work, the things that you've done from fanzines to magazines to all these different things. You've always been the broadcaster. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you kind of like...
I'll tell you something. I can't say that, you know, life's been easy at times. You know, it's been a struggle and it's been, you know, at times frustrating to sort of understand yourself and what you can do. You can do anything, really. But, you know, life throws you some obstacles from time to time and you just think, oh, bugger. You know, I'm not really being very successful in that avenue of my creative life or whatever, or I'm lonely, or I'm, you know, not majorly happy about this situation. And I do feel like in the 80s, I did, although it was an exciting time, and I, you know, it was, and there were brilliant, there's always brilliant people around, and I've always been in a gravitated towards groups of people that I felt that we all had like-minded ideas and ways of looking at things, and that's been fantastic and still is. But I did find myself at that time, in that decade, sort of thinking... I've not really focused in on one thing. And I looked around me and I saw lots of my friends becoming quite successful and very focused at their crafts and artistic endeavours. And I felt a bit like, oh, God, I'm real, like a real failure here, because I'm just pottering around doing the coat check and... working on the door of a club and, you know, and doing a bit of, you know, I was doing sort of bits and bobs here and there. And
making up the numbers sort of thing.
Yeah, I did do a little bit of knitwear actually, and then I did a little bit of modelling, but I'm not really a model, archetypal type model, especially in like the 80s. It was backward then.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, diversity... forget it.
No.
It just hadn't, you know, it wasn't really till the late 80s and till magazines like ID and The Face had really sort of like encouraged the idea of stereotypes being broken and the idea of these straight up, you know, the photographic style of a straight up and street fashion.
Which became a real thing, didn't it?
But it was those sort of magazines that were, you know, especially ID, were in sort of encouraging it. So I sort of find myself sort of, you know, at that time, sort of meandering around and not really being very focused. I did do a bit of DJing in the early 80s. I did at the Wag Club, which I was also the cashier lady of as well.
See, not content with being the DJ, she greeted at the door as well.
No, yeah. No, not on the same night.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah.
But
you could do, anyway.
Yeah.
You could do. But so then I sort of thought, well, I'm just doing all these different things. But actually, skipped, like, a few decades down the line. And actually, especially in this last lockdown, because I can sort of diversify and, like, do lots of different things, it's actually been a great asset.
Mm. All of a sudden you've realised what you can do and
I can do all sorts of things. Mm. And actually, that old adage of saying you're, like, you're master of none and something of the other, what's that adage?
Mm. Almost like a jack of trades, but it doesn't. Doesn't even come into it.
You've got to be. I think that I think really, if you're creative, you can sort of, navigate.
Yeah.
Various creative disciplines, and they are all connected some sort of way. You know, being creative means you're communicating, and that's what humans do. They want to communicate with each other, and on various sort of levels.
Money used to be the thread of everything, but now I feel like that jack of trades analogy. It's actually media that becomes the thread. It becomes the way in which you put out your content. It's almost like,
do
you know what I'm saying? Do you get where I'm coming from? It's like you're really, really apt at like doing one thing, which is you could be into knitting or sewing, but then on the same breath, you're doing DJ sets or you're doing, mini documentaries. But all of that is built around your time and how you execute it and put it out to the world.
And I've done all those things. Yeah. And I still do all those things, actually.
It's amazing.
Including knitting on occasion. Picked up some needles for quite a while, but you never know.
Well, you're friends with Pam Hogg and the likes of these finer characters. Big up Pam, big up Judy Blaine, rest in peace. You know, all these people that, were part of the landscape in the fashion world, right?
I'm friends with, I'm interested in fashion and because I'm not actually really in the fashion world as such, but because I love wearing it and I'm interested in it, I am around fashion and various fashion designers and creators a lot, actually.
Yeah, you seem to
but
be...
But also, and I think there's a lot of designers up and coming... are established that I'm very interested in and interested in wearing. Mm-hmm. And it goes right across the board. You know, it could be something like Nazir Mazhar's Fantastic Twirls pop-up shop and the curated designers that Nazir chooses to be part of that collective. Mm. Designers that show over Fashion Week or create films over Fashion Week, and they can be quite sort of mainstream designers or quite sort of, underground, just doing it off their back kind of
ideas. I love those kind of characters. When
you've
seen something from the beginning just growing and crystallising like that.
But I'm really interested in process, and so I'm always really fascinated by, how people go about creating different looks.
Because each one's different. Everyone deals with things differently, don't they?
And in fact, I did a campaign with McQueen, actually, over lockdown, and they actually... Because I was like, I really enjoy your... videos that sort of show people, create their creative process. Mm. a lot, and they actually said to me, "Oh yeah, people really love those. They're really popular." So I always think that's really fascinating. People like Matty Boven, who is really into craft, is fantastic. I think that sort of idea of process is really fascinating. And even, you know, like it's the behind the scenes, isn't it? You know, even when
curtains.
People are making videos and things, there's a lot of that going on.
I love that.
I did a lot of pop videos over lockdown, you know.
Yeah, I noticed, yeah.
Because it seemed to be that you could do shoots and pop videos.
Yeah.
And so, like.
And get away with murder because everyone else is in the same thing.
Yeah, you know, it's all like strict, but I really enjoyed doing those. So,
how many videos have you been in the past?
Loads.
Talk to me about loads. Give me...
But the most recent ones I've done is I was in the Kylie video just now.
Come
Kiss
on.
Kiss of Life.
Come on. Come on.
With Jessie Ware. That was lols.
Yeah.
I did a Celeste video.
Yeah.
I was in a Wolf Alice video, but I mostly ended up on the cutting room floor.
Really?
Yeah, that was directed by...
As requested or not?
Jordan Hemingway, who really had the... galling news to tell me that I was on the cutting room floor.
How very dare you!
I've been brutally edited.
Yes,
was the word.
Brutal.
So anyway, you know, but it was still lots of fun doing it. Mm.
Does it take a lot? Because when, like you were saying, you know, we are all human. We all go through this stuff. I mean, God, like, give me half an hour by myself in a place, and you know, it's enough to drive myself into a misery. But in fairness, when you're a walking, talking brand and you're constantly, because it is, you are, you're your own person.
Yeah, yeah.
It must be quite an upkeep, not obviously not from a, on a day-to-day, do you know what I mean? Like keeping your morale up, keeping it, because you know, being on a cutting room floor on any level is like, what?
I didn't really care.
What did I do?
No, I didn't mind. I just know that, like, you know, that can happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes you are edited out of things, photo shoots and things, and it doesn't worry me at all, actually.
Where did I go? What did you do?
I do feel like I've got egg on my face.
Well, far from it, and I feel like
I don't mind that though.
You get on with it.
Yeah, you know, it's whatever. I had a nice time doing it. You've just got to like live every day, haven't you?
And like you say, you like the process. So the process in that is more important than the execution of the delivery.
No, it's all important, but none's really more important than the other. I do make the most of, you know, these moments that I've, you know, lucky enough to be part of. It doesn't worry me. I mean, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, yeah, just keeping on going.
I've done great photo shoots and I've suddenly not been in the final edit.
cost me at least 15.
Written out of history again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that actually is far from true. I mean, again, just going back to you know, the precursor conversation of, you know, you've done a lot of you've done a lot of pundit based stuff where you're talking about certain eras, certain times, and you know, looking at that extensively, and the fact that the inception of it was all in the DIY, the you can do it yourself, that really does, even in conversations that I've, you know, you really know how to do this stuff in a very DIY, get on with it way.
I love how you've got this sort of like idea that I know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just making it up. I know what I don't want to do.
Yeah. What don't you want to do?
I've got a certain philosophies that I apply to things, and I will only too happily tell people in order to be a successful human, there's certain ideas that I feel we don't have to live by, sort of rules that society has made up for us to control us.
Give me an example of those rules.
Well, I just feel, you know, it's like an indent that you're... you carry on from your parents to, if you do have children, to your, you know, you may do this thing, which is a sort of social conditioning type of idea that you have to be doing certain things at certain stages of your life in order to be a successful human. And I actually think that those rules are bollocks. The idea that, like, by the age of 20, you should be in some sort of relationship, generally a heterosexual one, that's bollocks.
It's bollocks.
The idea that by your mid-20s or 30s, you're supposed to be married with a house and a mortgage and all the rest of it, that's bollocks too.
Bollocks. I'm with you.
I feel, and my parents actually said to me what a huge disappointment they felt I was because I didn't follow those rules. And lots of, and I feel that we should be living in a modern age where those rules are just not applicable anymore. But they actually are applicable. And I meet young people now that still have to navigate
that
kind of idea.
Yeah.
Because it's like ingrained into us.
In the DNA, it's literally, you know, yeah, from birth, it's what you're forced to believe.
Another thing that I am really into, I'm so glad that I'm alive in the age that I'm in, is the whole aspect of being non-binary. I feel very passionate about that, and I'm really glad that that is a thing. Because I've always felt that that the human race isn't so sort of cut and dry. And even in those, you know, my formative years, which I guess would be, you know, the mid-70s, you know, to late 70s, the new romantic era, we're in that sort of, like, environment, sexuality and what sex you were wasn't a question... And wasn't a thing that we really discussed. We just accepted all of each other as is. And to me, that was the perfect world. But once you step outside of that community, then you realise, oh, it's not really like that in the real world. You've got to be cut and dry this or cut and dry that, and there's nothing in between.
Yeah.
And if you're not part of that, you're a freak.
Yeah.
And an outcast.
Which is it's just so bad.
So I am. That's one thing I think the modern the age that we live in now has caught up with that idea in a mainstream way, and it is because of, you know, social media. You know, so I think that is a really inspiring moment, and that we actually do live in a time where there are positive things going on.
Constant chipping of the creative. It's like when you think of all the cultures that have moved forward, the progress stage by stage, generation by generation. It's almost like...
Well, it's like two steps forward and then two steps...
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a bit going a bit back, because I thought we were going forward. I mean, in the 80s, we were going forward, and then with the AIDS crisis, we went right back again.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were really going forwards.
Mm.
And then by the end, from the beginning to the end of the 80s, it went right back.
Yeah, back again. Society has a really... unfortunate way of being super slow on the pickup. I think maybe some of us creative people have a little bit overly forward thinking. I think the idea of it is beautiful, but like it's almost like we're always 6 months ahead of everything and then we've got to tell everyone to catch up. It's actually quite hard.
I think we're more than that. I think we're 5 years ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we get people up to speed? How do we do that?
I think it's just, you know, dismantling certain...
the system.
Systems that are in place that don't seem to be budging.
At all, yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I, well.
Yeah, I know.
I think that's my soapbox moment now.
And I think you just smacked it out of the park. Yes, absolutely. This will not be on the cutting floor. No way. Not on this watch. I do feel you a lot in the sense that you... What did it? 50 Cent once said it, you know. Progress is a slow process, and sometimes you just got to be there waiting for the opportunity. You must have seen so many different cycles, whether it's fashion or, you know, or opinions. Clubs come and go, and then resurgence of new styles that kind of hark back to a certain era. So I know, yeah. I do. Yeah, that must be quite...
Do you know what I like?
Go on.
I like this, like, continuum of raving. Mm. I love it. Yeah. It's really good fun. And I'm always very fascinated by, you know, I came up on you know, my favourite music is disco, and that's what I came up on.
Studio 54, really. Kind of stuff.
Well, even before then, really. Yeah, like, and going all the way down, you know. I love dance music and, you know, house music and rave music and it's all disco to me in its various forms. And I really established myself in the sort of mid to late 80s as a DJ because before that, really, DJing wasn't really a proper job. Mm. But it sort of became, by the 90s, it became a proper job for people to do. Mm. And I've enjoyed and still enjoy DJing a lot, actually. But what really bemuses me is that, you know, in retrospect, you know, that sort of like house music was the late 80s really coming up. It's like 30 years ago. Mm. But still, that style of music doesn't have a sort of vintage retro feel attached to it. It's still really modern.
Mm, it's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it really is. And even now, it's come in and out of the mainstream and la-di-da-di-da. You know, dance music, disco music, house music, whatever you want to call it, four to the floor, still retains an element of modernity to it.
Yeah, totally.
That is always like, it doesn't sound retro.
No, I agree with you. You know, there's another genre. Drum and bass is very much like that as well. It's never in the kind of... it has its time in the sun. Obviously, there's a few moments of
commerciality. And it comes back round again but generally, various ways.
The only difference is, though, I mean, apart from the small tweaks in... Well, house music especially. Apart from the small tweaks in, I don't know, mixing and the way people hear things sonically as a production piece, there is no date to it. It doesn't feel like it
I
ever...
I think maybe...
Do you mean?
What is that? What do you think that could be? Because I think... I'm a great fan of electronica.
I
know that, you know, all that music, drum and bass, disco, house, everything, it's all electronica.
Mm, it is. Nothing, I get off
Isn't
on,
it?
Yeah, totally, Kraftwerk. Even if you play
everything.
That now, it kicks ass.
Every time.
Every time. Like, Kraftwerk is
Every
it,
time.
Really.
And that's then, from like the like early 70s,
And it just
Kraftwerk.
Doesn't, it sounds new.
It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Moog music.
It is. It's electronica,
Moog.
Isn't it? Yeah. Moogie. Moogie and groovy.
Yeah.
But it is, isn't it? It's got a real youthfulness and kick to it that doesn't feel... It's all one and the same. It's all one and the
it
same.
It just still sounds really modern.
Yeah.
And I mean, Moog music, really, the Moog, that really... Is
Changed
the,
everything.
The 50s.
Yeah, yeah. Changed the whole... You can apply that to anything. And it
well,
retains
that's
a level.
Well, that's where I am regarding music.
Can you play the Moog?
No, I can't play it.
You should have a go. I think that's probably the next step there.
But, I mean, I have had a go at doing music production and remixes and doing vocals on things.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Sort of like, I've done quite a lot of things and I'm up for doing them again, to be fair, because I do things... like that, and it's interesting to me.
You've got a rich London accent. I can imagine that goes really well as a narrative. But are you originally from London?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Yeah, you've got the swag.
Yeah.
I can tell.
So, I'm interested in exploring different kinds of ways of making music. Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, it's very easy to make music nowadays. Super anyway, easy. You know, it's
super easy.
Yeah, and it's lots of fun.
It's lots of fun.
Yeah, I like to keep the fun element into things.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the quicker, in terms of easiness and approach, it's like the quicker you can get an idea down, the more playful it is, the more fun it is, right?
Yeah,
that's the great thing about technology now.
Yeah,
have you ever had an addiction?
I don't think I'm an overly addictive person.
So you've never had like a drug addiction?
No,
like
I
that?
Do like a drink. I've got a drink.
Yeah.
Problem.
What's your? Well, that you haven't got one, or that?
No,
that
I have had drinking issues in the past, which I have addressed, and also around food is very difficult on occasion. Feeling comfortable in your own skin is also a thing that concerns me and probably other humans as well. You know it's a thing, you know. So I think that's just, you know, in a way, for me personally, it's, you know, part of being human, I guess.
And
I have been depressed in the past at certain times, you know, and my way of coping with that sort of mood, if it does take me over, is that, you know, it means I'm alive and I can feel things. And I've got feelings, you know. I'm not without empathy. I'm not without sensibilities. And sometimes those feelings are very painful.
Do you keep that in you?
You know, as I've got older, I've not got so embroiled in a downward spiral.
Yeah.
So I've managed to recognise the feeling and then address it quite quickly.
How quick's quick? Is this a day or two?
Just sort of like if something's upset me. Like there's triggers. There's always triggers, aren't there?
What are the biggest triggers?
Triggers.
I can't imagine
there'd
be too many triggers.
Things can trigger you.
Social media?
Anything. Things on social media can trigger you, you know. It's just what your thing is and what you're going to get triggered by. And going about sort of addressing and coping with those triggering moments, which can be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it can be. I think we all have triggery moments.
Yeah, everyone.
And you don't realise it until you're in it.
You know, but once again, sort of trying to turn things into some sort of positivity is that the fact that you're triggered means that you're emotional, you're a human, you've got feelings, you can feel things,
you're present.
Can see things. It's not bad that you're triggered. You sort of have to embrace and then go forward with that knowledge. And knowledge is power.
Especially within oneself.
Yeah.
Do you think people get, and again, just staying on the positive tip, because there is answers to these things, and you're a very good person to, as a gauge. You, I feel like maybe you, to be quick off the mark, the knowledge of self, knowing when you're in a certain place in your head, a lot of people don't always conclude that. They think, I don't know. They execute
really
in different
hard.
Ways, don't they? They will comment something negative or display a level of negativity or aggression towards other people when really they really need to own their pain and work it out and know what.
Yeah, but it's,
share
it's
the information
getting to that point, you know.
Yeah,
that's you know, that's somebody's journey that they have to recognize and explore.
Yeah.
I'm not a psychiatrist or counsellor in any way, shape or form, but, you know, obviously people do come to me with issues and, you know, I can only explain things from my own perspective and I always make that point, you know, that it may or may not be helpful, my own experience. But,
that doesn't surprise me.
if it is helpful, then that's a good thing. But I really, you know, I'm not informed enough a lot of the time to, you know, be really maybe help that much, but I can help a bit in my way. But, you know, if you know, being human, the human condition is a very complex sort of situation. And it's weird being a human.
It's weird being a human out here.
It's really weird.
Just people-y out there, isn't it? There's a lot of things to consider.
Yeah.
Does it get too people-y for you? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think we all create our own spaces and places and communities.
Do you think a lot of people understand that? Do you think people understand that from a West London perspective to a Princess Julia perspective? do you think people? Are you happy that maybe it's not for everyone? You know what I mean? If you don't like it, you can go and do something. Or are you more embracive than that? Do you want people to understand it?
I think the main thing is to sort of understand yourself.
Yeah.
And then go forth.
Mm.
Because even the voyage of self-discovery is very complex.
Yeah.
And you can find yourself doing things or saying things at times that you think, no, that's not me.
Why am I saying that? Mm.
So, you know, it's a continual learning curve. Mm. And I'm not afraid to stand up and say I'm wrong.
Mm.
I don't think I'm right a lot of the time. I'm always learning things. I'm always trying to, like, widen my horizons. And I think from that, maybe that's a good enough foundation to go forth and just be present.
You're historically correct and you've got empathy. Do you know what I mean? That's a huge thing. That's why probably people come up to you and it's okay sign, because you're historically correct, your empathy, your forward thinking. That's why people come to you and ask for advice.
Oh, okay, you've worked it out for me. Thanks.
It's up there. It's up there.
Thank you.
It's up there.
Well, you know, I just think people creating things, saying things, doing things, standing their ground for what they believe in, it's all important, isn't it? Mm. Dressing the way they want.
Do what the fuck you want.
Yeah. Not being so upset about what other people think of them.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite damaging.
Do you think people get in the way of themselves sometimes? Sometimes. Have you ever done that?
No, maybe they don't, but I think society's conditioning gets in the way, because you think that's what you're meant to be doing because that's what society's told you you're meant to be doing.
Totally.
So it takes some element of bravado to step away from that, because there is a sort of sense of comfort in, you know, conforming maybe.
Mm.
Or the thing is, I don't really think I'm not conforming, but I when I look at the bigger picture, I do sort of think, well, I've not really done any of those things.
No, but you see,
that society's told me to do.
Which is so fucking cool.
Which I sort of, you know, it basically started when I was at school and I was told off for wearing too much makeup at age 14.
Jeez!
I was told to go home and scrub my face.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
And things like that. And I was just like, why that? And then my father trying to sort of make arranged marriages for me when I was... 15, you know.
That was a thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because that was a thing, you know, God. Hungarian, you know.
Yeah.
They like the girls of the family have to be married off.
Wow.
Pretty quick.
How did you escape that?
I just looked very, like, what are you even, why are you doing those things, Dad? Why are you saying those things?
Are your parents still around now?
Then I did a bit of research and then I realised,
yeah, that's part of the course.
It was part of the thing, you know. That's
are your parents still around
now? Oh, no, no. Did they... I'm an orphan now.
Okay. But did you, was there a levelling of they then understand what you're about?
Or do you think it ever got cleared? I think my parents were that sort of silent generation that don't really question very much.
Did it ever settle? Did the decision that you made and their outlook change, you know, as they got older? Did they accept that this was not really. Does that trouble you?
No.
Good for you.
I just sort of think that just people of a different time. I felt a bit sorry for them, really.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, you know.
I wonder what they think about the whole COVID thing and the injections and
stuff.
Oh,
my poor mum. She was very confused. Mm. And then she died.
Mm. Rest in peace.
R.I.P. Poor dear.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining
us,
Princess Julia. Legend inside the place, come on. And still, Future Ford, she's the contender in the game. No mucking about. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kept us out of trouble.
I hope I've enlightened you somewhat.
You've enlightened all of us. May it continue as well. You have to come around for a second chat.
Okay.
Yeah? Mm. Bada bing, bada boom. All tight, everybody. Killer Keller Podcast, striking with a vengeance once again. Yeah? Look after yourselves. Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.
Stay lucky now. Mm-hmm. Peace. What was that for you?
I think that's all right.